This is a free Off The Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off The Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Inside the Odds
on Off The Ball
with NoviBet. Get up to 50% boost on all bet builders with NoviBet. Download and play today. 18 plus, see gamblingcare.ie.
Right, it is Inside the Odds. That's how we know that the season, the English football season, is back because we do Inside the Odds on Fridays as a Premier League preview show. Usually, obviously, we're looking at a different game this weekend, the charity / community shield. It's all in association with NoviBet. Get up to €10 back as a free bet on the biggest Premier League and Champions League matches every week with NoviBet, built for the big games. 18 plus TBCs and C's apply. See gamblingcare.ie for more details. Shane and David are with me today. We're going to look ahead to the Community Shield, but we're also, I suppose, going to talk about the season ahead. I don't know. I got a when the World Cup ended, I was so happy to have a few weekends just without the tyranny of sort of like that kind of like having to constantly be at the, you know, beck and call of when games are on and the way the weekends are dominated. And then obviously we had like an unbelievable end to the GA championships and so on. But then, you know, there's that couple of weekends where there's not much on. And it's like, I'm happy with them and now I want the back. And I don't know, obviously my team were involved so it makes it different. But like, I really enjoyed the Super Cup the other night. I felt totally ready to have all these people back in my life on a weekly basis.
Felt like the perfect sort of gap, didn't it? Like, I know we're like, there's so much football and even we get a little bit sick of the amount of football that happens, but I felt like the gap between the end of the World Cup and this is healthy, perfect. Like Henry Winter, I mean, I don't know if you heard Henry Winter on Off The Ball Breakfast during the week, but still vociferous and very, very angry about what England did in that semi-final. So people, it's recent enough that people still are holding on to either positive or negative memories from the World Cup. And yet, yeah, it does feel like it's heating up. It feels like the pre-season friendlies, those few that I've seen the highlights for, they're ramping up and you're starting to see more and more of the big names for all of the big teams.
The game on Wednesday night, you probably didn't watch it, but like it was genuinely a very good game. Now it was PSG with a full team out, except for Dembele came on at half time, but other than that, like a full team out. But like earlier, probably in their, with so many World Cup players in their preseason preparation, so they're not at full pelt yet. But like they were treating it like a first game of the season, you know. But they ramp up slowly into a season anyway, so it's not. But like Villa had loads of people missing, but like were kind of at full pelt,
yeah,
and going for it. So it ended up being like a really good and interesting game, and I do kind of feel like it was that thing like above a preseason friendly, but without the devastation or feeling of defeat, you know, like so, yeah. Like there is that sort of. I do think we'll be in for an interesting few weeks because a lot of teams will have more World Cup hangovers than others, you know, like the bigger teams will have basically, with England going so far, with Spain obviously winning it and France, like that's a lot of Premier League players played up until the end of the World Cup.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting this week that Unai Emery was quite adamant and given those players Emi Martinez, Ezri Konsa, Ollie Watkins, the extra time off, and that they get their full time off. And like, to be honest, they're footballers, they're, you know, let's say their work is, you know, football, but like they should be entitled to take their holidays. And I think in the long term, hopefully that, for Aston Villa's perspective, that kind of works out for them all right. I don't know. It's hard to know. Like we were out at Manchester United on Tuesday, and in a couple of different bits and pieces, one of the interesting lines that we got was from Rio Ferdinand, and he had been due to do an interview with Declan Rice, I think one of the days last week on Sunday or Monday, and he was telling us he was all ready to go and do the interview with his team, his podcast team or whatever, with Declan Rice, and all of a sudden Declan Rice gets called back into the Arsenal training pretty much immediately, so he had to cut his holiday short. I think Bukayo Saka is the same. So over the next few weeks we're going to see the hangover of the World Cup, and in that as well, in that kind of Q&A session, Dennis Irwin talked about it as well after in 94, and Rio Ferdinand talked about it as well, that there really is a hangover after playing a major tournament and going deep into a major tournament. And how the players, how the managers, how the coaches manage this over the next few weeks and months is going to be really interesting. Arsenal obviously are playing on Sunday against Manchester City in the Community Shield final, but when we look at two of their players in particular,
just the Community Shield
but
it was brutal.
Yeah, but like Declan Rice and Bukayo Saka, Declan Rice in particular looked out on his feet during that World Cup, and okay, the conditions were tough, but how these players get back up to their full fitness,
not even just physically but psychologically
as well.
I think that's fascinating to look at what Arsenal are going to try and achieve this year, when you consider that, like, I've never known a team, and I don't know whether it was psychological or whether it was physical and the way they play the game and the amount, the fact that they have a decent sized squad, but there was about seven guys who were, every time they were fit, they were playing, and whether they just, but I've never seen a team just so, like, empty at the end of a season. And obviously that was shown in the World Cup from Saka and Rice, I suppose, in particular, right? But, you know, what you said about, like, giving lads the time off and so on, right? So the FIFA mandate is 3 weeks from your last game in the World Cup. That ended last Saturday and Sunday, I believe. Or maybe it's Sunday and Monday if it's after. It's 3 weeks, right? So it's Sunday and Monday. Sunday for the English players and for the Argentinian Spanish players that have been Monday. If you're telling me that Declan Rice was called unexpectedly into training on the Tuesday, that's about as early as Arsenal are entitled legally to have him back.
Yeah.
That suggests to me there isn't, like, they didn't go, oh, look, maybe we need you in for an extra, you know, like, this season is starting, we need you in for, you know, a couple of days, but we gave you a bit of a rest. Yeah. They gave him nothing. They gave him nothing than what they actually were having to do. And it's just like, what are you doing here? You've got a £100 million asset who's one of your most important players, who his entire game is energy.
Yeah.
And getting up and down and, you know, psychological energy as much as physical energy when it comes to Rice.
Yeah.
And it's just like, they're just like, oh, we're just going to flog you until you've nothing left.
Look, it might be intentional. And maybe he was in during the week and it was, maybe he initiated it as well. He wanted to come back in. Maybe it was just a couple of gym sessions and different things. And obviously players,
I'm sure it was. You'd like them in the building after 3 weeks, sorry. But it's more, do you want them kind of with the first team going full on, full hog preseason?
Yeah.
They're not going to need much preseason. They just need rest.
At the United training, Manchester United training on Tuesday, interestingly, there was a group of about 33 players overall, and about, let's say, 22, 23 of them were training collectively as a group. And then there was another group outside of that, and that was Bruno Fernandes, Lisandro Martinez, Matthias De Ligt, Marcus Rashford,
Ahmad,
players that had played in the World Cup and are obviously still coming back to fitness. And that was Lisandro Martinez's first training back at United, and obviously he got injured in the World Cup final. So yeah, I guess different clubs have different plans for different players coming back off a very long summer.
Is Rashford going to play for United this season?
I thought his days were absolutely
numbered. Why would he not, though?
Well, now I think he would. Like, the way Michael Carrick seems to be talking about him and the way he seems to have been welcomed straight back into training by the camp, it seems like he is going to have a role. Now, whether I don't know, will he have any more of a role than he did at Barcelona?
A pretty heavy role, though.
Yeah, look,
he'll have maybe four choice in the front three, like, you know, which is,
he'll have an impact.
That's a lot of game time, like,
yeah.
You know.
Look, I assume you're playing the Champions League as well.
What's United's front three going to be at the moment?
Obviously, Cesc goes injured, so even Bumo flanked by Acuna and Ahmad.
Yeah.
Probably. Until Cesc goes back. Cesc was very close to being back.
Okay, so Ahmad is in there as well. So it's probably Rashford will be one of five.
Yeah.
Dorgu.
Who can play in all three positions.
Dorgu,
Yeah,
he'll beat Dorgu. And I think he'll beat Diallo as well, to be honest.
I don't think so. Like from the sense of things,
United fans have turned so much on what Marcus Rashford was in those last couple of years, mixed with propaganda and the fact that the club was being run into the ground by two idiot managers. Like, I think they've now turned to having overrated him, I think, for the first half of his career massively. because I don't think he was ever at that full-on world-class level. I think they've gone to massively underrating him at this stage. I think bringing Rashford in, energised and wanting to play for United again, could be a massive benefit for them.
Look, from the brief time I'd seen him on Tuesday, he did not look interested to be there.
Really, yeah?
Because they were signing different things and different bits and pieces. Look, for those players, it's part of what they do, whatever. You know, they take a couple of selfies and sign a couple of autographs, but you just get the impression that he's not that interested in being there. Look, he's on $300,000 a week. He doesn't want to take a pay cut. He's entitled to not take a pay cut. He's 2 years left in his deal. There's still, about 2.5 weeks to go in the window anyway. I would be still surprised if he's a United player come September the 5th.
Is that how late the transfer window goes?
No, I think it's the September 1st or 2nd. Okay, but there are other
ways you can get out.
Other windows that close later and I don't know. Like, I think is for his own sake, and the noise out of Manchester United is that we're going to reintegrate him. It's like having a new signing.
Do they believe it though?
I don't buy it.
He's not like Jadon Sancho. He isn't someone that's gone and is never coming back. Like, he has played good football in the intervening time.
He was pretty good at Barcelona, and obviously Barcelona probably wants to make that deal permanent, but then they were like, oh well, Anthony Gordon
doing a Clásico there at the end of last season,
yeah, and they're like, oh well, Anthony Gordon's on much less wages, we can get him on we have to pay fairly big money for him, but we can get that deal done and probably save in the long term by not paying massive wages.
Sure, but United would have totally signed Anthony Gordon if he was available to them.
Would they?
I think so.
Really?
Well, I don't know.
It's about to get very reactionary. If Rashford plays a little bit in the first couple of games, scores a goal or two in the first three games of the season, say, people can be like, United fans will be like, hold on to this guy. $300,000 a week.
What's his squad number?
14.
14, isn't it?
Mm. He's lost to 10. That's Mateus Cunha. Like, that just tells you all, like, your time is done.
Well, you can't take it off Cunha.
No, you can't, but you took off Rashford already. And he's on loan.
Yeah,
but
yeah. I know, I think that's fine.
I think it's just mental that, you know, we're talk about Manchester City and Arsenal, we'll go already to Manchester United. So there's your
narrative for next week. I'll defend this to the hilt. I know I'm in here with two Manchester United fans, and I am very much not a Manchester United fan. They have been, for the last 5 or 6 years, and I went on a rant this week on the show on a slight tangent about the media, including us, being like way overly focused on six teams.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what those six teams, good or bad, do. I do think United do fall outside of that for me. I just think they're fascinating. Everything that happens around them is just really genuinely interesting. They're far more interesting now than when they were winning leagues all the time.
Yeah.
There's an unbelievable psychological story about what's going on at that club, and it could be on the turn. I don't know, but I don't trust it until I see it.
There's still two solid signings in this window off. You know, repeating even what they did last season, because when you count all of the extra games they're going to have, if they're to get third place in the Premier League again this season, and maybe get, I don't know, quarterfinals of the Champions League, would be a massive success this season. Yeah. Repeat what you did in the league last year, but back it up. Maybe win a trophy, a Carabao Cup or something.
They should be aiming for at least second in the league, I think.
That's what the, you know, Dennis Irwin said during the week. Rio Ferdinand is saying, finish in the top three of the league, maybe get to Champions League quarterfinal and win either the FA Cup or the Carabao Cup.
But they're still a left
United
back.
United played 40 games last season.
Yeah, they're another left back and a midfielder off that. I think. Like, I don't know who they're going to sign, but like,
yeah.
What do you think of Santos and Tielemans?
Santos has looked really good so far.
I liked Santos at Chelsea. We mentioned it on this show last year. I couldn't remember his name. Do you remember? That's why I remember it happening. I was getting confused, calling him something else. But I remember he had stood out to me in a couple of games where Chelsea had a few injuries and he had come in, and I just thought that he was like, he looked very assured, and he's young, like, and will improve, and he's got a good physical presence, I think.
Yeah, he played 40 games last season for Chelsea.
This was earlier in the season.
Like. So he's... He probably struggled to get into a team. Well, obviously, Moises Caicedo, Enzo Fernandez, Reece James played a little bit in midfield as well when he was fit.
Lavia, when he came back.
Yeah, actually. I think it says more about Chelsea that they couldn't get the best out of him or kind of integrate him into the team or into the squad or into the first 11, let's say. From the United side of the things with pre-season, he looks to be quite good, but I would caveat by saying it's pre-season, and Man United have had famously some players that play really well in pre-season. Andreas Pereira famously called the pre-season Pirlo, and then when it came to actual football, he wasn't as good as what he was. So, like, I'd still you know, I'd still be encouraged, but I'd also still kind of hold off and really kind of nail my colours to the mast in that one. But Youri Tielemans is a fantastic Premier League midfielder for a really good price. He's 29, but yeah, I think...
Yeah, when did we start writing off 29-year-olds?
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Leo Messi just was 39 scoring 7 goals at the World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like, no, more than that, was it?
Yeah. 8 goals. Yeah, I think the Tielemans signing is a fantastic signing. I just don't know how, like, Michael Carrick, it seems, wants to change the style of play from what he kind of implemented last season under when he came in after Amorim. It was a bit more counter-attack. It was a bit more, you know, solid. We'll be solid defensively and we'll counter-attack a little bit and we'll play when we can. Now it seems to be his Middlesbrough style, which is like possession-based. He has technical midfielders in there with Tielemans, Andrew Santos, Kobbie Mainoo, Bruno Fernandes. There might be one more midfielder coming in. I'd imagine it'd be someone... maybe their physical attributes might be better than their footballing attributes. So I think United are going to want to go and impose themselves on the games this season and to have a possession-based style is what it seems like. I don't know if I'd fully agree with that, but yeah.
I've watched Tielemans obviously very closely for the last three seasons, and like what you can sum up what he offers by what Villa were missing, say last season when he missed about 6 weeks. And they honestly went from good form to not being able to create a chance in a football match. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, like 1-0 down, you know, in the 98th minute and not somehow not just even having the wherewithal to get the ball forward even, you know. He is such a smart footballer. He does a lot of stuff that, I don't mean invisible work, like some sort of, you know, saying that. So it's more like the little passes he does, like, I mean, in possession, it's not invisible at all.
Yeah.
But it's also not like necessarily like defense splitting, open everything up, score a goal. But it's advancing the ball constantly and creating space. He just has such a beautiful way of getting the ball forward to the right person. And he's a really, I just think he's a smashing player. Like, I think he's going to fit in really well at United. One thing I'd say is I had my slight tangent rant about people not knowing anything about the other teams and how my point basically was that doesn't happen, say, in American sport. No basketball pundit doesn't know as much about the Memphis Grizzlies as they know about the LA Lakers. They talk about the Lakers more, that still happens, but they're not ignorant when it comes to the other teams and the other players. And this was before I saw a clip of Paul Scholes saying that Tielemans could get away with being inconsistent at Aston Villa, but he won't get away with it at this level. It's like Villa have been operating at a higher level than Manchester United for 4 years now.
Yeah, look at the last.
You know, it's absolutely bananas how blind reality is versus he's going to a bigger club and it's a bigger, there's more pressure on, but he wasn't talking about that.
Yeah.
He was talking about the fact that you can hide at Villa, basically. It was like, what are you talking about? Look at the combined table since Tielemans has signed for Aston Villa, and Villa miles ahead of United.
Exactly.
Some of the big name pundits get away with less substance because of their name. Genuinely speaking, like some of them in those podcasts.
Who has more substance?
I know. Yeah.
I mean this honestly. I actually think that, like, Grant, I do think we're in like a loudmouth culture as well, and there's an element to that to be sure. That, you know, we know who we're talking about here with, you know, and then we're in a kind of a club expert sort of era as well, which is annoying. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't feel like there's that many out there to have any idea what's happening in the other 16, the other 14 clubs.
Yeah.
You know, to any real extent. They talk about the data and all of that stuff around the Brightons and the Brentfords and everything like that, but they don't really talk about them as a football team.
Yeah.
And they certainly don't talk about Newcastle, Villa, Everton, Leeds, big clubs with a big following, more combined than Spurs, say.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Spurs aren't bigger or aren't more interesting, but the fact that they're just completely on the scrap heap.
Yeah.
I think especially in England. I do think it is slightly different in Ireland because it's not localised. You've got way more Manchester United, Liverpool fans than everybody else, and then Arsenal would be a big gap before the next group. You know, so there is it is a bit different here.
Yeah.
But
I don't know, like what... What pundits do you like to watch and listen? Like, I can't think of too many off the top of my head.
I think even the best sports writers in England are totally consumed with what's happening at the Northwest and the London clubs.
Is that just you know,
it's geography as well, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Well, are they just kind of influenced by editors and kind of, you know, internet traffic, social media maybe. Noise as well? That, okay, like Manchester United gets, and we kind of know it here too, that Manchester yeah. United will get loads and loads of comments, whereas Everton get a lot less.
Yeah.
So
and they're no less deserving. It's just that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
how do we spread the love?
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Man United here for the last 20 minutes.
We actually do it okay usually on this show when we go through some of the games.
And
we'll
actually
have a decent conversation about Bournemouth start of the season or something. But,
what does the banner say? Old Trafford, hated, adored, never ignored.
Yeah,
absolutely. Look, you can't argue with that. All right, we're going to do Community Shield. We'll do the second half completely on not necessarily that game, but so much as the players will do our bet builder. If there was one more club that interested you looking into the season, and we'll do it a bit more next week probably when we're talking about individual matches and things like that, who is it? Because for me, I hate to say this because they annoy me, but like Spurs kind of coming into this season with a completely new team. It's just interesting. It just could be one of those, you know, when you kind of look back when you're at the different eras when we were all kids, but it's like that sort of like, you know, those sunny August games where teams are really exciting.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is that new team that's come together with a load of new signings.
Yeah. Takes a while to gel.
Yeah.
It can, or it can all click brilliantly and then fall apart after a month as well.
Yeah. For me, like Spurs are fascinating. The team I pick is Newcastle United.
In the other way, though.
Yeah.
As in, there could be a disaster.
Well, maybe it also could be.
We said that about Brentford last season, that's before the whole thing kicked off.
Yeah.
There's it lost, they're guaranteed for relegation. I a lot of pundits were saying that.
Yeah.
But,
I remember saying it directly to Nathan Murphy on the show after their 2-2 draw with Chelsea on a Friday night. That Brentford would be totally fine. Remember, they were really good then, and just thinking like they'll absolutely be grand. But yeah, maybe pre-season people had given up on them. All right.
Could Manchester City, like for me, Man City, a life after Pep can go horribly right or horribly wrong. The first 4 weeks of Maresca at City is going to be fascinating for me. I cannot wait to see what they do, because I can't imagine with City it's going to be middle of the road. I think it's going to go like they're going to have some horrendous results.
For me, City it'll be boring.
The usual. Yeah.
Like it'll be fine. Like Haaland will score a load and then he'll go to drought or whatever, and they'll be better than we think, or it'll be worse than we think. But I just don't think it'll be exciting.
Yeah, don't go away.
I think we'll really miss Guardiola.
Yeah,
like this is such.
We will.
Yeah, I think we'll just.
He was the only thing keeping Haaland and him were the only thing making that club anyway interesting.
Yeah, and it's mad. Like we had like maybe the summer of Erling Haaland where we watch him. Well, I personally watch him for City, and I'm like, oh god, it's just he scores, you know, from 8 yards out and different things. But then he plays for Norway. I'm like, brilliant, this is class, because he has to like nearly not do the whole thing himself, but he's just such a danger for Norway and the team is built around him. Whereas I just find City boring, like, you know.
I kind of do too. I have to kind of try and reappraise that and come into the season with a fresher look and sort of like, but even this week, like, so City, who were technically outside of the parameters of that question, Shane.
Of course.
Because we're talking about them in Arsenal now.
Yeah. Sunderland.
For no reason.
Yeah.
No opinions, but Sunderland are the ones I'm interested in. Spurs, Newcastle and City Grand are the teams we're looking at. But even the Community Shield, like Arsenal versus City should be, oh, that's a great way to start the season, you know?
Yeah.
But actually, I'm not like excited by it. That was the rivalry of last season. It was the game that we all waited for that game in, was it March or April, you know, that was going to be the title decider. Turned out not to be, obviously.
Yeah. Declan Rice saying it's not done.
Yeah, it's not done. It's not done. It was a great moment in Premier League history, all right, but it wasn't a title decider. But it doesn't, I don't know, they're just, neither club are just like, I don't feel like we're on that sort of high, how do I put this? Do you remember, like, if Arsenal and United in between, you know, 98 and 03 had met in a Charity Shield?
It was a point of viewing.
It was a big game. Yeah. The rivalry, the hatred, and the excitement of the actual games themselves meant it's an extra United-Arsenal game. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
I think basically Liverpool City is probably the other good example of that.
Yeah.
If they're playing in the Community Shield, you're like, great, I'm glad. It's another mark off the rivalry. I don't feel that way about these two teams.
Yeah. Not yet.
I'm not being like overly negative. I just they just don't thrill me. Like,
no. Yeah. Look, I think that could be some to do with the style of football that both teams play with as well. But I think that it is going to grow more and more. And I think in the next, you know, in this season that's coming up, you've got Arsenal and City probably most likely to be one and two in the league again. And like, there's a couple of moments. I think when you do think back to that game at the Etihad towards the end of last season, like, City really did think that was the one where they had them, and obviously they faltered then after that. But there was, like, you know, like, Gabriel should have been sent off for the headbutt on on Erling Haaland. So Gabriel and Erling Haaland obviously had the moment in the World Cup where Haaland goes just kind of off his shoulder and then powers a header home to, you know, knock Brazil out of the World Cup. I think there is a couple of, like, different storylines in this game that are quite interesting. I don't know whether we see, like, a blockbuster game on Sunday. I don't think so.
Is it a bigger... So, obviously, the Community Shield matters if you win it. Obviously, it's a trophy. And Jose Mourinho has spoken about his documentary. He counts the Community Shield as a trophy, etc., etc. You put it down in your honours list. But teams don't really care unless they win it. And that people say it's all laying down a marker. That treble year, Manchester United's treble year, 98-99, like, Arsenal beat them 3-0 in the Community Shield.
Yeah.
Now, you could go on and say the opposite and say, well, maybe that inspired that United team to go on and beat their rivals in the league. But
the only thing I'll say about that was United's greatest season, but that was a brilliant Arsenal team that could have beaten them in the FA Cup semi-final and could have caught them in the league as well.
True.
I don't know who knocked Arsenal out of the Champions League that year, but domestically Arsenal were as good as United, really. Yep. They were just, you know, minuscule level behind them.
Like, look, there's no shadow boxing. Like, teams go out to win this game and it's that close to the season, you can't shadow box. You have to put your new signings in, you have to get minutes in the legs, but ultimately a lot of these games go to penalty shootouts that we've seen in recent years. I think someone said 8 of the last 10 Community Shields have been won by the FA Cup winners, which is interesting as well. I don't know if it says much, but these games, like, even if you're a fan of one of these two teams, you don't really care unless you haven't won a trophy in a bit of time and something. I don't know.
Well, that can't happen.
Palace. Not for these two. Yeah.
But Palace beating Liverpool last year was... I remember it being kind of like, doesn't matter. And then I remember, like, a lot of Liverpool fans going, hold on, there's issues here. Like, this is, I can't even really remember what they were or the actual narrative around it. But there was definitely a lot of Liverpool fans just going, this is a real issue here.
Yeah.
And I remember then they played Bournemouth, wasn't it, on the first day of the season and went 3-1 up or something like that. And
2-0 to 2-all, then 1-3-2 or something?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. And again, that was the start of them getting away with it for 5 weeks. And by the end of the fifth week, everybody had dismissed what had happened in the Community Shield. But it kind of came back around again. It wasn't like just like friendly game to dismiss. It revealed something about Liverpool.
Yeah, and it was like Jimmy Carragher actually wrote a column around then as well. And then obviously spoke about it on the television. It was like, I don't fancy this Liverpool team defensively. And then he kind of ultimately was proven right as the season went on. I just remember those games in particular, and it kind of was a theme throughout the season that Liverpool were just being counter-attacked and carved open by pace and the counter-attack for teams playing against them. That's what that they really struggled with last year. Whether we see something like that now this year, like whether we maybe Arsenal set pieces or their domination at corners and long throws, maybe we see that. Maybe the PGMOL actually referee the game. And
apparently we're in for the couple of weeks of the season where the rules are completely random before everything settles into it. That's what I heard anyway. So
That goes. Does something like that happen? Like, does Maresca, obviously Maresca is like a, you know, a Guardiolaite, so is he going to play some really expansive football? I don't know, but that's going to be interesting to see as well. City are obviously a team in transition as well.
What do you think of their transition? So the thing that would worry me is apparently where they're in negotiations at the moment for a price on Enzo Fernandez.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, is that what you need? Is that like, they need to buy their, you know, that they have enough money and they can just go and buy who they want. But, like, is Enzo Fernandez the answer to what Man City need to replace
Bernardo Silva.
He's not the Rodri replacement. I know that.
But it's a very
They are, it looks like that Rodri is going to happen, is it?
I think it is. He's not going to sign a new contract. He's out of contract at the end of the year.
Does it matter though? Would they be better off letting him go for free than 30 million? What difference does it make to Man City?
Well, they've rejected, 30 and 55. So I'd imagine Barcelona are pulling levers all over the place to try and get this deal over the line. It looks like Real Madrid have completely cooled off on it as well. I don't know who City signed. Maybe Ayew Buadi, that was excellent for Morocco in the World Cup. He looks like he could be the next big player in at Man City, along with Enzo Fernandez. I don't think if you're City, I think financially, I think you do have to just cash in at some stage. But the City rebuild is interesting. Bernardo Silva's gone, obviously. Yeah. We had De Bruyne gone the year before. You've got, this is Erling Haaland's team.
Someone said of the treble winning City team a few years ago, there's only two. I think it's Haaland and Ruben Diaz maybe in the squad that are still open to correction on that. But someone during the week was saying that.
Is Jack Grealish a Manchester City player?
Yeah, he is. He's only back full training this week, actually, after his injury. He's been 6 months out. There is talk of Everton signing him, but as of right now, he is training with Man City. But I don't know if Jack Grealish is the answer to it.
Elliot Anderson seems to be the replacement for Rodri. Obviously, they've already got him in. 116 million on a player who I was really impressed with, like last year, playing for Nottingham Forest. And then I watched him at the World Cup.
He's fine. He's good. He's probably good enough for Man City. And if he's good enough to start for Man City, then he probably is 100 million because it doesn't really matter. Who they've brought in? They've brought in Anderson, who is only 23 as well, for a kind of defensive midfield player.
And that's the English tax as well.
That's important. They've brought in Mathis de Torbet, who's a left winger from Troyes. There's 25 million. He's 19. Jeremy Monge is a 17-year-old. They brought in a 20-year-old goalkeeper. They've brought in a 34-year-old Argentinian goalkeeper who was at the World Cup. They've brought in... and that's all. They've got a Kanji back from loan. This hasn't been a mad summer for City by any means. No. You're probably talking about one first-team player being brought in. We talked about Enzo Fernandez. Considering they have lost, if they are to lose Rodri and Guardiola and Bernardo Silva, I don't know. Are they replenishing? I would say Shane's right. This could go either way.
Arsenal's business looks better, doesn't it? I know the Vinicius stuff was probably all rumours, etc., etc., but Bruno Guimaraes is obviously a big man to come in. I don't know what's happening with Miles Lewis-Skelly. He's still being linked with moves elsewhere, including Manchester United, I think. But
yeah, I can't see that happening.
No, surely not. He's a squad man. He's a man you can play in various positions.
Towards the end of last year, he'd been out of the team and not really getting off the bench. And then Zubimendi's legs were gone. And all of a sudden, Miles Lewis-Skelly was in and he was excellent. He was excellent in the Champions League final as well. And he was actually a real difference in those last five games for Arsenal. The fact that they're looking to maybe move him on. And is this because of he's an academy player, we double our profit on him sell him?
Yeah, possibly.
It could be that. Or, I don't know, the fact that he played so much in the latter stages of last year would suggest to me that Arteta has broken him down and rebuilt him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they are looking to move him on. Maybe they're sensing the market. But you got that as well. You got him, you've got Daumen is going to play a bit more this year, you would imagine. Yeah. And you've got, I don't know if they'll keep him, but Nyamari is back from loan as well, right? So it's at some point, if these lads are going to be the future,
they've got to be now.
Sometimes it can be hard when you're as good as Arsenal are. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're going for a Champions League, they're going to retain the Premier League. But it's if these lads are the future, you can't hold them back forever, unless they go Premier League loan maybe.
Yeah,
for those guys, but I don't know. But they've only brought in Guimaraes and Solis is a replacement for Trossard. Really.
Yeah,
I don't know much about him.
Seemed to play for Pauk against Bowes years and years ago in the Aviva Stadium. The interesting one over the last 24 hours about Arsenal is that it looks like Gabriel Martinelli is going to be moved on. I guess Max Diamond would it be his replacement.
Yeah.
And Ethan Nwaneri, they've seemed to really cool off on him, and someone who I thought was going to be an absolute world beater when he first got into the Arsenal team.
He's still only 19,
but he's also linked to go to Galatasaray. But Victor Osimhen coming the opposite way. I'd be very surprised if that does happen. But that does say to me, and obviously they're linked with Julian Alvarez, and looks like he doesn't want to go back to England. It does look like to me that Arsenal do want a striker.
But you also mentioned the Jarrell Kwanza one this morning, which has come through, like the, that they're in talks with Bayer Leverkusen, apparently.
Jarrell Kwanza and Ezri Konsa for Arsenal. Are you are you over 6 foot two, and are you a defender? Come right ahead, please.
Look, I think Konsa's definitely good enough.
100%, yeah.
But I just... The Arsenal method of unsettling players is like, it's so, they just basically come in and go, we want you to come to Arsenal. And they're like, oh yeah, I'd love to come to Arsenal. Great. Oh yeah, I didn't know you were in for me, but like obviously, see you later, Villa. And then they offer the club 30 million. And then it's like, Villa are the bad guys for saying, what? No. Yeah. And then it's like suddenly you have an unsettled player who doesn't want to be there anymore, is trying to force a move, but he's perfectly happy 20 minutes ago. Yeah. Now, the other thing about that is, I don't know if it works for Arsenal either, because I'm pretty sure that's why Morgan Rodgers now plays for Chelsea instead of Arsenal.
Yeah.
Because like the clubs don't want to do business with them.
No.
They're coming in here like literally saying, right, that's it, player's gone, there's no way of keeping him now. Yeah. But you've offered me 40 million under market value for him.
Yeah. Arsenal aren't great at selling players either. You know, they're not, they have a bit of a bloated squad with players, a lot of players in similar positions.
Yeah. It's a big season for Viktor Gyökeres as well. That's 14 goals, one assist last season.
Yeah.
He'd be expected in second season in the Premier League to push on, but it doesn't always happen.
Be interested to see how it all goes. Let's have a look at the bet builder that we've done for this with NobiBet for the Community Shield. We have gone for Gabriel to get a card. I went with that a few times last season. Rarely let me down. You think that his rivalry with Haaland will be... David's done this bet builder, by the way. So yeah. You think that his rivalry with Haaland is going to be...
It's going
to... Yeah,
while over.
He's going to be thinking about that Norway-Brazil game in New York and thinking, I need to get one back on him.
Gyökeres, who Shane has just mentioned, we've gone for one or more shots on target. We've gone for one or more shots on target from Gvardiol, which is probably the big odds booster in this one. And we've gone for Manchester City to win. And what's the overall price there?
My eyesight 28 to 1.
So it's a big bet builder. We've gone for week one. If we win this one, we set up for the rest of the season.
That's the plan. Go big or go home.
Yeah. So talk us through that one a little bit.
Like I said, Gabriel and Haaland's rivalry will bubble up and Gabriel will get yellow carded. Viktor Gyökeres, surely he's going to start. You know, his World Cup ended, fairly early with Sweden. So he's been in pre-season for a while. All he needs is one shot. Surely he can get one shot on target. Joshua Vardiol has got a great record from set pieces. So I think he's one of the most high-scoring defenders over the last couple of seasons as well. Fancy him to get something from a set piece. And then I just think Man City are a little bit further ahead than Arsenal right at the moment, and they're going to win in 90 minutes.
Just to mention, like, Arteta loves the Community Shield. 2 for 2 as a player, 2 for 2 as a manager. So he's never lost the Community Shield. And also it's in Cardiff, of course. We haven't mentioned this again because apparently the weekend is playing Wembley Stadium on Sunday night. So it's in the Principality, Millennium, whatever we want to call it. But it's in Cardiff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
They've sold Wembley on the week of one of the FA games.
For a gig. The weekend without.
Wow, and we were giving out about Croke Park.
I know. I'm going to double check it's the weekend.
It's not the biggest game in the world, but like that is the FA giving one of their set piece games of the year away.
But to be fair, I think a lot of these games and a lot of these stadiums are underused. So like move them around, play them in different places. To be honest, I remember.
Wembley's probably underused as a football venue, isn't it?
Yeah, but then, geez, you ever watch an England game at Wembley? Oh my God, bore you to tears.
The worst thing they did with the redesign of Wembley, like the unforgivable thing, is making the Ord Corlia, whatever they call it in English, right in the middle of the stand in front of the thing, because the first 5 minutes of both halves just red seats. Those prawn sandwich brigade, finishing their free drinks and
their
do
pims.
Not come out. They couldn't give a rat's ass what's happening on the pitch.
Like. No. I think there's plenty of that at Croke Park on Wednesday from what I've heard as well.
Well, I'd imagine so. Yeah.
It'll be
Dermot Keely was here. What would he call those?
82,000
morons.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, we will we'll wrap it up there. If you do want to have a look at David's bet builder there, 28 to 1, not a bad way to start the year. Inside the odds with NobiBet, you can get up to €10 back as a free bet on the biggest Premier and Champions League matches every week with NoviBet. Built for the big games, 18 plus, T's and C's apply. See gamblingcare.ie. We'll be back with you every Friday next week, week one of the Premier League. We'll be looking forward to then.
Inside the Odds on Off the Ball with NoviBet. Get up to 50% boost on all bet builders with NoviBet. Download and play today. 18 plus, see gamblingcare.ie.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbann, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan, and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.